James chapter 5, verse 1. Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver is cankered. The rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you, kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. So what do you think James thinks about the rich? And you know, texts like this give pause to people and give the idea that God is against wealth. The content here tells us that it's not about the treasure, but about the manner by which that treasure was obtained and maintained, by not paying what was due, by not paying workers, and by trusting in the riches to be the sustenance through the end of life. He says the last days. So what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about enough to carry you through your life. Money is not going to save us. Money is a tool, but it must be used as a tool. And, you know, I had to borrow a stapler from Brother Ronnie yesterday. I have one, had one, somewhere. But what happened is it wasn't secure, wasn't locked away in a bank. And so undoubtedly somebody borrowed it. Now, that may not be the case. I may just forget where it was. But it wasn't maintained. It wasn't kept in the right estate. You know, as far as tools go, we have to maintain them. We have to oil them, have to sharpen them, whatever is necessary to keep them maintained. And the same thing with finances. We've got to maintain our finances. You can't just give it away or just let it sit there. And, you know, how many times have we heard stories of people who discovered coffee cans in the garden full of money, and or in the walls of a house or under the mattress? And why was it there? In fact, my grandfather and grandmother lived with us when I was young. And after they passed, my dad said, we need to tear out the carpet in your bedroom. And so we did. And he said, you need to tear out the carpet in the closet. I'll let you do that. Now, I don't know how old I was, maybe 12 years old. And I went in there, and like a lot of lazy 12-year-olds, I said, I can't do it. But that was the room where my grandparents had stayed when they lived with us. And when he finally went in there and pulled up the carpet, he revealed cash that my grandfather had been stashing. Oh, I should have just pulled that carpet up. And it was hundreds of dollars that, well, you know, it wouldn't have been my money, but the discovery of the treasure. And so we don't need to hide it away. We need to be wise and fiscal and thrifty, but we also need to put our money to work. And putting our money to work may mean, you know, in our household and our needs, but also charitably to give to those who are in need. You know, God is not, again, against us having nice cars and houses and clothes and all that kind of stuff. But if all of our income is only for us and we don't share it with anybody, that's what we're talking about here. When we come across somebody in need, we ought to help them. We don't have to give them all of it. We don't have to buy them a house. But we can help along the way and do what is generous, but also what is wise. And so we need to be mindful of that. And also we need to pay our bills, you know, pay those that we owe. In fact, here he talks about employees or those who labor. He said, they've done all the work to get you where you are, you know, as far as harvesting the fields, and you didn't even pay them. And there are a lot of people who forget where they came from. And I've told that story many times of a friend of mine who at one point in her life was dumpster diving and shrimping on the edge of the seacoast just to feed her family. And then she got married, and life turned around. They had businesses and millionaires. And she would see somebody who had been in that same condition and turn her nose, though she had been there. Don't forget where you came from. And remember how blessed we were. So blessed. We're so blessed. And we need to be generous, but not foolish. And so James is, he's not criticizing us for having money, but he's criticizing us for hoarding money and wealth and treasures. And don't be foolish, because there are people out there. It doesn't take much to tear at the heartstrings of someone who's kind and generous. And if it's not somebody that you know, because the internet now has infiltrated every home. With CenturyLink, it hasn't infiltrated very much, but but it has infiltrated every home, and so that gives people all around the world the ability to send you a video or a picture that says, "I need your money, and look how bad my situation is, and if you don't help me, I don't know what we're going to do." You got to be careful about that. And my advice to you is, don't give money to anybody that you don't know personally and present. And now we got these scams out there. Somebody told me the other day, you need to talk about this in church, and I guess it's as good a time as any. Now you can get a phone call that sounds like your grandchild or your daughter or son, and it's their voice. It sounds like them, and they say, "I need $500. I'm in... about to be locked up," and blah, blah, blah. And then another voice gets on there and says, "If you don't send us money right now, we're going to put them in jail, or we're going to kidnap them," or whatever. And it sounds like your loved one, and people fall for that. And I've had church members come to me and tell me, "Hey, they called and said it was my grandson, and the line was a little fuzzy, and I wasn't sure if it was or wasn't. And so I sent the, $1,000 or $2,000. Or gave them access to my account so they could get the money out. Big mistake. Get another phone and call them and say, "Hey, where are you?" "I'm fine." But it sounded like them on the other line. Don't fall for that. We got to be careful about these internet scams. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And so use some wisdom. Call and say, "Hey, is this real?" Because sometimes in the moment we get in that and it's... Man, how many of us could use $50,000, right? If you didn't raise your hand when you get it, give it to me, because I could use it. But they'll come along and they say, it's $25,000, and this is a big one. It's a federal program, and it's $25,000, and it's not a loan, it's a grant, and all you got to do is put in your information. Well, now they got your information, and don't fall for it, because... While we don't want to be hoarding our money, we also don't want to squander our money. Right. Whenever you're on the phone with a company, say correct, or something. Don't say yes, because once you say yes, now they say, "Well, you signed up for this, 25-year solar panels on your roof, and here's your voice, and you saying yes, and here's your name, and you said yes." And so you got to be careful. It's just so wicked. So don't say yes on the phone. Be careful who you're talking to, and always verify. If it's got to be done right now. The other one, and we see this all the time, you didn't show up for jury duty, and you've got to pay a $500 fine, or we're going to put out a warrant for your arrest. And they say, "You got to pay the money." Well, how do I pay the money? You got to go to Walmart and get Apple ID cards or green cards. Hey, let me give you a tip. Anything that requires an Apple ID card or a green card to pay for it is a scam. So anyway, Brother Andy. Right. Yes. And they just call all the time. And so you got to be careful. We got to be wise. And why am I talking about this in church? Because they are targeting people who would take that money and help people with it. And we see it as an opportunity to help people. They see it as an opportunity to help themselves. And so be careful about that. Be very mindful that It's crooked. Okay. And he goes from talking to those who are on the outside. You see that? The first six verses, he's talking about people who he says are not doing right, not doing well. And then he goes to verse 7, and he says this, "Be patient, therefore, brethren." So now his attention has turned. "Be patient, therefore, brethren, to the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and has long patience for it, until he receive the early and latter rain." So, we have to learn patience. That's what verse 7 is, patience. The ability to follow the process, to wait out the process, to give things time to work. You know, people get saved, they get baptized, they're all excited about it, and then, you know, a couple of weeks go by, and they don't feel like they're walking on the streets of gold, and so all of a sudden they've lost patience for their faith. And they go back to the world, back to what they've known. And, you know, the Bible talks about a dog returning to his vomit, being the same as a believer who turns back to the world. We've got to be patient. You know, you're not going to get saved today and know the whole Bible tomorrow. We're all still learning the Bible. And we continue to read and learn and grow and discover. Isn't that great when you're reading the Bible and you discover something, even though you've read that verse hundreds of times in your life? But there's some new nugget in there. So be patient. Wait for God. Wait on Him. And when it comes to the return of the Lord, when it comes to us going to heaven, we don't need to push things. We need to do God's work while we're here. Look at verse 8. "Be ye also patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh." Now let me assure you that all of those who initially read this letter from James are dead, right? They all went to the grave. Their spirit went to heaven. They're not still here. So when he said, "The redemption of the Lord draweth nigh," Paul said, "Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up." And Paul died. You know, the apostles died. All these people who wrote to us and assured us that it was drawing near and it was coming close, they're gone. So the message continues for us with the same thought, the same mindset, that our hearts have to be toward God and we have to be patient. We cannot, I know I said this just this week, but we cannot go out and run up our debts and live carelessly thinking, "Well, the Lord's coming back, so it'll be okay." No, that's not the idea. We need to be living for God. And you've probably seen this or heard this week. You know, what would you do if you knew you were going to die tomorrow? Jesus washed feet. You know, that's that. Our life should be service. Our life should be serving others and serving God. Verse 9, "Grudge not one against another, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door." Years ago, there was a book and a program that came out called "Don't Sweat the Small Stuff." How many of you remember that? "Don't Sweat the Small Stuff." Probably still, I hadn't read it in probably 20 years, but probably still good reading and applicable. We have got to not get so caught up in the problems of today. You know, as this political campaign season ramps up, I mean, it seems like it's already at full blast, but it's going to get a lot heavier. We cannot allow ourselves to get entrenched in debates and arguments over politics. We could state our stand and our opinion and our point and use reason and research and all that kind of stuff. But once you've made your statement, they've made their statement, be friends anyway, if you can. But don't get into arguments and let it ruin your whole day and ruin your friendship and relationships. There are people who don't talk to their loved ones over politics, over political differences. And while there are many political stands that I can't abide, I don't know how people could be so ignorant as to believe them. And I won't tell you which ones they are unless you catch me afterwards, then we'll talk. But I don't understand how they can, number one, call themselves Christians and have those values, if you will. But You know, they flip it on the other side and they say, well, this and that. And so, but let's not fight over it. Rapture is near. What should our focus be? Our focus should be on winning souls. Our focus should be on showing the love of Jesus. Our focus should be on having that peace that passes understanding. And when we lose control of our tongue and lose control of our emotions and get so passionate about something that this conversation is not going to change, right? How many of us have solved the world's problems sitting around a campfire or sitting around a cup of coffee? And did any of those problems get fixed because we talked about it? They didn't. So let's not sweat the small stuff. Doesn't mean we can't talk about it, have good discussions, but let's have reasonable discussions about those things. Instead of having a grudge against somebody because they have a different opinion than us. And we could go around the room. We're not going to. But we'd go around the room and find something controversial. I mean, we've got Seminole fans and Gator fans in here. Any others? There was somebody playing the piano yesterday from Clemson. Can you believe that? Right? I mean, but we do. So people get so caught up in that stuff. Let's not have a grudge against somebody being mad at somebody over something so trivial. Take my brethren, the prophets, verse 10, who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering, affliction, and patience. We count them happy which endure. You have heard the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. What's his point? What happened to Job? Tell me the story. He lost everything, and not just material. He lost children. I can't think of no bigger loss than that. And he lost everything. And what happened? He continued to trust God. But not just everything back, multiplied. The end was better than the beginning. Which, you know, it was still too high a price to pay, wasn't it? But, I mean, even his wife said, curse God and die. You know, so his marriage was affected by it. He lost his children. He lost his employees. He lost his enterprise. But he got it all back. How did that happen? Let me assure you this. When he woke up the day after, he wasn't full again. How long does it take to have one child? Right? So if you're going to have 10, that takes time. Too long. Don't touch me. Get away from me, right? But that takes time to build an empire. It takes time to rebuild. Guys, let's say you're saved, and you lose your testimony, you lose your ministry, and I'm not talking about a pastor, I'm talking about a Christian. You lose all credibility, and then I talk to people, and they want to kill themselves because they say, I've lost all credibility. Okay, but here's what you do. You start today, and you build that credibility back. One step at a time. One move at a time. But if you just wallow in your pity, it's not going to get built back. It takes time. It takes process. It takes patience. But as we serve God and we're faithful to God and everything starts to work and then we get in the groove, if you will, we start moving in the right direction. But it takes time to rebuild. To rebuild a family. To rebuild a testimony. To rebuild a ministry. To rebuild a business. To rebuild your savings. You know, the Great Depression, and we have the image of people killing themselves because they had lost everything financially. But we could start over and build it again, but it takes time. And so you might have to, you know, eat a jam sandwich for a while. Y'all do know what a jam sandwich is, right? Jam two pieces of bread together. That's a jam sandwich. Might not be anything between the bread, but that's what we got to do to get built back. There are setbacks in life. And James is saying, because you've had a setback doesn't mean it's over. But we got to have patience and trust the process, trust God, and it'll get there. And that's why he brings up Job. Yes, he suffered. Why did he suffer? Why did Job suffer? He became a target of Satan because of his faith. He became a target. And sometimes when we're doing the right thing and being faithful to God, we'll become a target. And that will result in a setback or a reset, not just a setback, complete reset. But if we'll trust God and stay faithful, it'll turn around. Verse 12, but above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. So what does that verse mean? Simple. Simplify it. I'm from Pahokee. Make it easy for me. Okay, don't be wishy-washy. Be credible. Have integrity in your word. Build confidence in others regarding you. Can people trust us or not? Can they count on us or not? How many of us ever made a promise we couldn't keep? So what do? You say, I can't do it. I'm sorry. That's it. But at least you acknowledge that you failed. But if we don't acknowledge that we fail, that ruins our credibility. Verse 13, is any among you afflicted? Pray. Is any merry? Sing. Right? There are cures. If you're having trouble, talk to God about it. If you're happy, show the world. Verse 14, is any among you, any sick among you? Call for the elders of the church. Now you can't be mad at the preacher. I say you can't, but people do. When you don't let me know, when you don't let the pastor know. And, you know, and we have to be reasonable about this. Not only to let him know, but also to understand he's human too. Now, if the pastor doesn't make an effort, then that's a reasonable complaint. But if if he just doesn't care, well, then why is he pastor still? Let's do something about it. Let's get rid of the guy. But if he tries, and if it's not enough, you know, or just call and say, hey, can you come by? That's all. That's all it takes. But don't just sit back and think, well, he doesn't care. Well, he might not know. It's just so important. I want you to know something. I love you. And I want to be there. I don't ever want you to feel like you've been abandoned by your church or by your pastor. I want to be there. But you've got to let me know. That's all. And if I haven't done enough, then just tell me what it is I need to do. Sam, I don't mean as a church. I mean one-on-one, because it's your feeling. If you think the pastor ought to be there sitting in the waiting room while you have surgery, then just say that. But if he stops by and has prayer and then leaves and that makes you angry, then say so. Say, well, aren't you going to stay? I mean, that's all it takes. Can you come and sit with me, you know, while my friend has surgery? That's fine. Happy to do that if it works out. But we've got to have the conversation. Don't just be mad. If you're sick, let the elders know, and then let them pray over them. Anoint them with the oil in the name of the Lord. If you want prayer, call. You want us to come together as, you know, get the deacons or the whole church or whatever and put our hands on you and pray, we'll do it. We'll do it.
I
Amen. And happy to do it. Right? We're happy. We're going to pray for you anyway, so why not pray in your presence? And the prayer of the faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up. If he have committed sins, they shall be forgiven. Verse 16, confess your faults one to another. What, again, I said, if you mess up, just say, I'm sorry. Just admit your mistake. It's about being transparent. There are people who think that we think we're perfect. How many perfect people are in here? Put your hand down, Carolyn. We already knew. Well, besides you, right? But think about that. How many of us? None of us are perfect. We know we're not perfect. We're not putting on a facade to pretend that we're perfect. I know I'm not perfect, but by the way, guess what? I know you're not either. Confess your faults one to another. When you mess up, say you messed up. Pray for one another. If I confess my fault, pray for me. Don't criticize me. That you may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. How about our prayer life? Is it effectual? Is it fervent? I mean, when we're praying, is it fervent? I mean, do we really get into the prayer? Do we really go before God and get our soul before God and His throne and His presence and say, God, I need this. God, they need this. It availeth much. Elijah was a man subject to like passions as we are. Just a man. Just a man. Peculiar wardrobe and diet, but just a man. He prayed earnestly that it might not rain. It rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again. And the heaven gave rain. And the earth brought forth her fruit. If any of you do err from the truth, and one convert him, let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. Our business is the gospel. That's what we do. That's why we come together. The gospel. If you have abdicated that responsibility, today's the day to talk to God and say, God, I've gotten caught up in chasing money. I've gotten caught up in the squirrely things of life and getting my heart and mind all disjointed and distracted. And I'm coming back to the mission of my life, which is to serve you, which is to serve others, which is to show forth Christ. Admitting, you know what? I'm not good enough to do this. I'm not perfect. But admitting that there's a need and that God has called us to meet that need. Anything? All right, let's take a break.